Welcome to Private Equity Perspectives, a podcast by BDO USA's private equity practice. Each episode, BDO connects with leaders in the private equity space to discuss the latest trends driving deal activity, fund strategies, and portfolio company optimization.
Hello and welcome to BDO's Private Equity Perspectives podcast, where we explore trends impacting private equity today. I'm Todd Kinney, National Relationship Director in BDO's Private Equities Practice. Today, we have the privilege of being joined by Shane Thiemann, partner at Gamma Capital, and John Schwartz, partner at MRE Capital. In this episode, John and Shane will discuss how recent interest rate cuts from the Fed are impacting their short and long-term deal-making outlook and how factors like inflation, rising labor costs, and more are impacting how they support their portfolio companies. In part two of this episode, which will come out in a couple weeks, we'll explore their differentiation strategies in an overly competitive environment, exit strategies, and as always, what they believe is on the horizon for PE. So just a quick reminder to our listeners that the remarks and opinions of our guests do not necessarily represent BDO's views. With that out of the way, Shane, we'll have you kick off the episode. As a partner at Gamut, can you tell us a little bit about your role, your firm, and some current focus areas and priorities for Gamut?
Thanks, Todd. Appreciate being invited on the podcast. I'm Shane Thiemann. I'm a partner with Gamut Capital. I joined the firm in 2018. Gamut was formed in 2015. Today, we manage a little over $3 billion of capital deployed across two funds. We have a very lean team. We have 16 investment professionals, all based in New York City in one office. Our investment philosophy is centered around transparency and alignment. We go to market based on a value-oriented approach and specialize in navigating complex situations across a very wide set of industries. We pride ourselves in being very focused and detail-oriented when it comes to underwriting standards. And we take a control-oriented view in seeking private equity-style returns. With that said, we also have a very flexible mandate. Allows us to structure investments in different ways to address the various flavors of complexity we encounter. To hit maybe on a few of the more common areas of complexity we see, one of which is balance sheet complexity. Given the level of adjustments inherent in a lot of the pro forma EBITDA presented by many that supported financings at rates that on an adjusted basis were much higher, or the increase in interest rate environments that's put pressure on free cash flow. We see a lot of situations where good businesses don't have the appropriate access to capital and are struggling from a balance sheet standpoint. We have the ability to come in and address some of those concerns. We also like to try and structure complexity around structure when we can. The most common would be areas in which we can facilitate a transformative M&A transaction, maybe to help partner with a sponsor that's out of funds, maybe to support a strategic as it relates to carve-out efforts, but anything that allows capital to come in and help effectuate a transaction is something we like spending time on. And then the last is just businesses that have market volatility or general complexity. We are typically not the buyers of businesses that have gone up into the right straight for 20 years. And when you roll all that up and you look at our portfolio, we tend to punch above our weight when it comes to size of investments, given the overall capital we have deployed. If you look at our portfolio, we have investments that range from 50 million of EBITDA to 200. And we have target equity check ranges, which are in the $100 to $500 million range. We also have a bit of every flavor I've mentioned as it relates to structure. We have traditional LBOs, we have corporate carve-outs, we have structured growth, some distressed, and we think that has allowed us to deploy capital effectively and efficiently over a sustained period of time. And then, lastly, our overall goal in these complex situations is to work alongside with, and we couldn't do it without, the industry executive relationships we have. We have a group of over 200 across probably 15 different sectors that we touch at some point in time across all of these investment opportunities. And we're always working in conjunction with them to mitigate and protect our downside while generating attractive risk-adjusted returns. So it's a little bit about our strategy. And again, appreciate having me on the podcast.
It's my pleasure, Shane, and certainly the helpful background. So, John, over to you. Can you tell us about your role as partner at MRE, the family office itself, and some current focus areas and priorities for your firm?
Yeah, certainly, Todd. And first off, thanks for having me on, especially since this is a private equity podcast. And, you know, candidly, we're not a private equity firm. So we are a family office led by an operator first and foremost. And we have one goal. We wake up every day at MRE, and that's to build great businesses over long periods of time. And fundamentally, when you look at the private equity model, you know, we don't really think it's feasible to build a great business in a 3 to 5 year window. So we're taking a much longer term approach and time horizon here. And ultimately, what we're trying to build at MRE is it's really a new model, right? Like, we want to bring together the flexible timelines, the best of family office, the investment discipline and the rigor that private equity brings to diligence and analysis. And then most crucially is really an operator's mentality. We're partnering with people-based services businesses. They're generally 5 to 20 million of EBITDA. And our brand promise to these companies is we're going to help you grow 2 times faster than you'd otherwise be able to do on your own. How we do that, our secret sauce, is really our growth playbook. And this is a playbook that was developed over 32 years by our founder and CEO, David Williams. He scaled a marketing services business from about $3 million of revenue to north of $1 billion. We really lean in, and again, I think our time horizon allows us to do this, and we spend a lot of time on strategy development, executive team development, culture, and putting in place a world-class management system. And I know some of these areas might sound relatively simple or basic, but you know, David and I spent a lot of times talking, and in our years doing this, I don't think we've seen a single company that truly has a written strategy. And, you know, fundamentally at MRE, we say, you know, if it's not written down, it's not real. And so really kind of putting those foundations in place to be able to accelerate growth is what we wake up and do every day at MRE.
Understood. Well, I'll tell you, it's great to have a family office on the podcast, John. I'm sure our listeners will appreciate the insight and, you know, getting behind the screen a bit. So happy to have you.
Thank you.
So now that the audience knows a bit about both of your firms and yourselves, let's dive into the main conversation. So again, we're in an interesting market environment right now with the Fed having cut rates just recently in September. So how, if at all, does this impact your near and long-term outlook for deal making? Shane, I'll have you tackle this one first.
Thanks, Todd.
Yeah.
Frankly, I don't remember a time where the market hasn't been classified as interesting. So it's a very relevant point as it relates to rates, but also as it relates to a lot of other factors that I know are impacting businesses directly. To speak specifically to how that has impacted our go-to-market strategy, our portfolio, you know, I'll go back to sort of the premise of the Gamut investment strategy, which is that of value. And because we have a value-oriented approach where complexity drives opportunities, our activity, fortunately or unfortunately, is not as dependent on a low interest rate environment. I think velocity clearly benefits everyone, even those who are looking to find areas of complexity. But they're not as important as folks who are looking to plug a sell-side deck into a model, spit out a return, and follow the process from there. So from that standpoint, we still believe and we see just as much opportunity in times of dislocation, if not more, than times of stability. The second thing I would mention as it relates to our strategy and how that plays into this environment is our business model is not driven by maximizing leverage. As I pointed out, we focus on, one, building as much flexibility as possible. Part of that is a necessity based on the fact that we have a fairly concentrated portfolio, but also just based on constructing businesses with attractive risk-adjusted returns. We spend a lot of time building in downside protection. We obviously, like everyone else, have seen and are aware of the 2021 60% deal activity spike, which is pulling forward activity that probably otherwise would have followed. But at the end of the day, what that's resulting in, as most folks know, is longer hold periods. It's creating an opportunity to find partnership opportunities as part of our flexible capital mandate. And the biggest factor does still hinge around this notion of velocity. And it's just a math problem, right? As rates have expanded 500 basis points, and it's great that there's been some relief, but during that period of interest rate growth, it impacted most businesses somewhere in the 1 to 2 turns of implied multiple pressure on exit just because of the incremental free cash flow. And for us, we see a lot of opportunity in the interim as a result of those dislocations, and we've tried to capitalize throughout our portfolio. The last thing I'd mention is if you look across as it relates to developing risk-adjusted returns, it's not just a term we throw out lightly. Our overall portfolio, when you look at leverage levels, is half of the industry average. So we are very prudent with the amount of leverage we put on businesses. We're very cognizant of the games people play with adjustments. We pride ourselves in having lower level of adjustments. And we know the deal environment can be fickle and very unforgiving. So we always come back to the controllables, right? Management talent, the ability to underwrite risk, and making sure we have these resilient capital structures in place as offensive tools, or I should say defensive tools, because when we look at opportunities, we oftentimes find ways to be offensive as a result of the lack of focus on others building out that same level of downside protection. Good question. It doesn't just apply to downside market scenarios. It applies to all market cycles and deal environments, and it's something we spend a lot of time focusing on.
I appreciate that perspective. A lot of good insight there. So, John, what's your stance on that question? As a family office, given recent rate cuts, how, if at all, is MRE shifting near and long-term outlook for deal making as a result?
Todd, we're growth investors at the end of the day. So we're not
right.
trying to make our returns with excessive use of leverage. Our average starting leverage has been roughly 2.5 times, so fairly conservative. We're not focused on maximizing leverage. We're not focused on multiple arbitrage at the end of the day. And as I think back to me joining MRE in 2022, it's been a pretty tough deal environment year to year. But there's opportunity everywhere. And if you really have a differentiated narrative and you have a differentiated playbook, that's where that opportunity comes about. And when you look in that window, we've leaned in and closed 5 platform investments during that time. So to us, it's, get the strategy right. Have very clear growth drivers, very clear profit drivers, very clear value drivers, and then lean into those periods of uncertainty and buy great businesses. I think what our timeline allows us to do is find great businesses that we can compound capital, knowledge, culture over very long periods of time. And if you get that right, what's happening with rates quarter to quarter doesn't impact our appetite to partner with companies that we can scale and drive a ton of value over very long periods of time.
Appreciate that. Again, it's good to hear how family office is thinking, John. So let's pivot to a different topic, guys. We've all felt the impact of macroeconomic challenges this year, and I imagine they're influencing your management strategies. So how are you both helping your portcos protect and improve margins in the face of various issues like inflation, rising labor costs, tariffs, and even uneven demand? John, why don't you kick us off on this one?
So most of what we're doing, as I mentioned, is labor-based services. So less impact from supply chain and tariffs. But again, it really gets back to optimizing growth during these periods, not so much margin. So when we talk to our teams, we want above average growth and we want an average industry margin profile. If you look back to what David Williams, our founder, did, he built a business that he compounded and grew revenue 23% over a 30-year period. And then in the last 5 years before he exited that business, he drove 1,100 basis points of margin expansion. So don't get me wrong. We believe margin is very important over time. But what we're doing is trying to double down on growth during these more uncertain times. And it's when you start to see, competitors do some irrational things. They get a lot more focused on price and we're more focused on growth and trying to take share. We're playing in these very large fragmented markets. And candidly, we're playing in markets that have a ton of private equity activity, which might be a bit counterintuitive. But, you know, our observation is we see private equity firms in these industries where they, you know, make up their mind that they don't like a certain segment or a certain service line. And a lot of our discussion here at MRE is asking ourselves, well, what does a customer actually want in this industry? Not just the shareholder that's going to drive a higher multiple. And so we kind of joke, it's like, you know, a customer showing up on your door and asking you to do an install project in some of these services businesses, which install has become somewhat of a bad word within these industries. And, you know, it's like the firm responding and saying, well, we don't do that type of work because it isn't recurring or it doesn't help us expand our multiple. And so at the end of the day, we're very focused on, you know, having our customer centricity and employees that love working within our platform. And I think if we're able to get those two things right, we're going to drive a lot of growth throughout these platforms.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Shane, what about Gamut? Can you close out the first part of this episode for us by sharing how you're helping your portcos protect and improve margins amid these continuing macroeconomic pressures?
Absolutely. Yeah. First, I just want to acknowledge John's point on growth. I mean, there is the knock-on effect to any choice or lack of choice to raise price to offset inflation has a direct correlation to growth. And that's one of the biggest challenges of any of our portfolio companies when it comes to protecting margins. But, you know, I just want to take a step back and make the point, which I believe is going to be obvious to most, which is in order to protect margins, you actually have to have a margin profile that was worth protecting to begin with. So if the individual underwriting standards weren't high enough and you don't have a business that has a definable moat or high barriers to entry or brands, intellectual property, all of the key attributes, again, to John's point, what the customer wants, right? You have very limited ability to influence some of the important drivers of margin, most notably price, in an environment where demand is soft. It's very, very challenging to do so. And so I think, you know, at a fundamental baseline level, making sure that your underwriting work was accurate in terms of the ability to position yourselves when times were tough is a key attribute to this downside protection I've referenced a couple times, not just in underwriting, but also in capital structure formation. And so, you know, to answer the question specifically, we have a portfolio that touches a lot of different end markets. We have packaging assets, we have automotive assets, we have transportation logistics assets, we have consumer assets. I'll sort of stop there just to make the point a little less lengthy. And in each of those scenarios, we're not exercising all of these strategies, but pricing is a huge lever that you have to get right because your competition is also making those pricing decisions real time. In some cases, we bring in third parties. In some cases, we help supplement and provide analytical support. In some cases, management wants to tackle the challenge in-house and report back. In all of those scenarios, what we care about is the results and the actions management's taking and tracking. And so whether it's pricing, whether it's reassessing channel strategies, SKU rationalization is a big one. Looking at global sourcing options, which frankly, in hindsight, if you made too much movement there, you probably just had a bunch of friction costs to be in another geographic location that's impacted by tariffs.
Right.
All these elements are things we spend a lot of time as a team with our portfolio companies and our operating executives to figure out what the best course of action is. And the most important part of it, or one of the most important parts, is once we make a decision, we're all aligned on that decision and there's no finger pointing afterwards. We are just assessing whether we were really right or really wrong and then making a new decision. So that's, I'd say, a big cultural component to how we address what's a very, very challenging time, admittedly, for a lot of our CEOs and CFOs within our portfolio.
Appreciate all that insight. Great sound bites for the listeners to take away. So guys, listen, thank you both for joining me today. We're going to hit the pause on this discussion for the time being, but we'll be back in a couple weeks to talk more with John and Shane about deal competition, exit strategies, and staying disciplined in the current market. So Shane and John, thank you again for taking the time to join the podcast today. We look forward to hearing more from both of you on part two.
Thanks so much for having us, Todd. Enjoyed the discussion.
Appreciate it, Todd.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. To our listeners, thanks so much for tuning in. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and leave a review of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, this has been BDO's Private Equity Perspectives.
The views presented by our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of their respective firms.